That's the O'Chilly Effect. Welcome to RealLibertyMedia.com, RLMRadio.xyz. If you're not listening live right now and you're downstream, come on back, find the R-Log. You'll get some links here to hook up. Hey, Chuck, how you doing? Thanks, welcome aboard.
Yeah, doing okay. Hopefully the mute button's working all right. So, yeah, that was a little piece of the theme song written for me by Renegade Smith, and that is at the beginning and the end of all my shows, I don't know, for the past 1,000 or so.
Right.
And, you know, the first couple, you remember there was a different tune, different tone at the beginning, and it was something that I did myself. It was kind of noisy and really messy.
Oh, I remember it. Everybody back in the UCY days will remember, too. We've got some listeners here that came over from UCY.TV here to Real Liberty Media in the chat room, RealLibertyMedia.com channels, chat page 1, PHP. There's right there in the R-Log. You can find it. I've pre-published the blog, so Grimner says premature e-publicate, which I came to Vin e-publication. Yes. Can't take it back after you already published it, right? Hey, Moose Girl, she hears a hillbilly. Does that sound like a hillbilly to you? You're further south than I am.
You know, you could tell I'm further south than you by my accent, right? No, I definitely retain my northeastern sound, but every once in a while you hear a little something slip in there when we're talking, and you know, you use phrases like let me think about it for a second. I mean, you know, see, you might say bless their heart once in a while. You might ask if somebody's, geez, I don't even know what the other phrases are. I know it's slipping in, it's creeping in, because I'm in the state of Georgia, or at least what used to be the state of Georgia, here in the alleged United States. So, yeah, it's been an interesting journey, my friend. I don't think I sound anything like a hillbilly, unless those hills are somewhere in, I don't know, North Jersey.
Well, listen, we're going to have to get you to practice, so we can get you some language lessons. Learning to speak American. Now, there is a connection between the Nor'easter, the Bostonian accent, and the Southern accent. That's when you want to put an R into a word when it doesn't have one and take it away if it does.
Well, you know, that's true. But again, I kind of grew up in the New York, New Jersey area, so, you know, it's more more attitude than accent, I guess.
Hey, forget about it. All right.
Forget about it.
Hey, welcome everybody that's in the chat over here. A couple of chat channels at the Real Liberty Media, Pound, and Politics 360. Big shout out and thanks to Anti and Wanna Taco for giving me some artunication and inspiration in my e-publication today. Now today, Chuck, just Chuck O'Chilly, for maybe somebody listening that doesn't know who Chuck is, and many of our listeners here do. He's known as the blind research, the blind JFK researcher. And so in here in the R-Log, you'll be able to click on and see some added features here. We've got I've put some pictures in here, and I'm going to put some more in there. I shared them from realliberty.org over into the chat here just a little bit earlier on conspiracy back into the 1960s that Chuck shared with me. So today it is conspiracy theories in the New World Order, and that's some of the topics we're going to be looking at and discussing the ideas. And I'm just hoping I didn't misspell anything there as I'm looking. Anyways, we'll fix all that up anyways down the line. So, Chuck, one of the main reasons that I'm addressing this right here is in partial response to the Bundyville podcast part 2 from Leah Sottile and Ryan J. Haas. They've done they've gone after the low-level fruit there. They've gone to pick that, and so they're not having a hard time really dealing with some of these idiots involved in wanting to bring about events. And so conspiracy. Now, we can have conspiracy by obvious criminals, and then those that kind of slip through the cracks, and they come into being, come to be a part of the way things in the world operate. So when you start talking about alternatives to the mainstream ideas, then somebody throws tinfoil at you and tells you to build a hat, right?
Well, yeah, and that's an interesting thing because, you know, again, the root words for this and the phrase, a lot of people think it was invented in the 1960s. It wasn't invented in the 1960s, conspiracy theory as a phrase. It was invented a lot earlier. I dropped some etymology links to both the words conspiracy and theory in the chat room at RLM there, just to give people something to look at. To get an idea of where these words come from, what they actually mean. What I focus on in the meaning of the word conspiracy is the word spire. And why? Because, well, if we think about the concept of respiration, it is rooted in the idea of repeatedly breathing, repeat obviously being the prefix, right? Respiration. So you can identify that that word has to do with breathing. And literally the word conspire is to breathe together. Now, not only is this a proper term, but it's also the more natural condition by which human beings in general collaborate in order to accomplish things of significance. You breathe together, you work together, one way or another. Most people are not lone wolves. Even if they're terrorists, they're usually not lone wolves, okay? Doesn't work that way in the real world, never has. So the concept of conspiracy, although it's got negative connotations to it, because the first thing, if you look at it on the etymology page, and almost any of these alleged definitions out there, is to give it a negative connotation. It is most commonly used today, really, in legal practices, and properly, because, again, people collude, conspire, and work together in criminal activities in one way or another. So many convictions you see that are legitimate in courts of law, which, you know, not everything is legitimate in a court of law, we know this, but fact is that the concept is real. People do things that are in violation of other people's rights, certainly, and they conspire to do that constantly. I contend that the government does this a whole lot more often than it's ever charged with, but anyway, this is a thing that needs to be examined objectively. So then you have the word theory. And if we take a look at where the word theory comes from, even to go back to the Greek, it is basically a matter of assembling a logical process by which something is achieved. And this is what you do based on some observations and also basic logical constructs. So conspiracy theory, although the phrase has been demonized, and although I gave you the document to show you one of the instances in which our intelligence agencies decided to undermine, and if you notice throughout it, there's a bunch of mentions of the Warren Commission critics, the individuals who want to question the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and all of that. They're conspiracy theorists. You see that phrasing right there in that document. And it's meant to be a derisive term. Now, is it actually a derisive term in its essence? I don't think so. But what are your thoughts, Vince?
Yeah, I'm looking at the I posted those pictures onto the realliberty.org so that and I'll add that into the radio log. Yeah, it says here the trend of opinion is a matter of concern to the U.S. government, including our organization. The members of the Warren Commission were naturally chosen for their integrity, experience, and prominence. They represented both major parties, and they and their staff were deliberately drawn from all sections of the country. Just because of the staff. Yeah, I had one place in here particularly I was looking to pull out, but they set it up to self-exclude themselves or excuse themselves. In complicity, and these people were insiders and part of the cover-up. But it's pretty plain to me that there's not much theory involved left in that. It's pretty much fact. Several people, Mike in particular, has made a comment about he wishes the word theory would be taken out of that. And some people call it theory or conspiracy factualist. So
Well, right. I think of it as conspiracy realism.
Mm-hmm.
But look, in a lot of cases, you do have theory which must fill in the gaps because a lot of known quantities are simply not known. And therefore, but it's not a dirty word anyway. You start with a theory when you're attempting to assemble, you know, a set of charges. Once again, we're talking about, in most cases, the things that are identified as conspiracy theory. We are talking usually about something that is somewhat obscured, has been absconded with in some way, either the evidence itself or the activity is conducted undercover in some way or other, which means that intentionally some of it was, you know, not out there in full public view one way or another. And again, I'm trying to be as objective about this as possible, but to me, I don't think you need to remove the word theory. You need to remove the stigma from the phrase to begin with.
Absolutely.
You know, because it is accurate. You require a theory sometimes, and then what you do is, well, you research and you find evidence to fill in that theory with facts. You know, as best you can ascertain that facts are reliable and less refutable than others, so on and so forth, you know. Again, also based on logical constructs which are known. You know, for instance, you would not say that somebody got on their cell phone in 1975 to have a conversation because you would realize that that technology, although it may have existed in some capacity, was not reasonably accessible to the average person. So for the most part, you could dismiss a statement like that, you know, based on the conditions under which something is going on, based on a time period, technological advances, the availability. See, this is not a matter of, you know, just dreaming things up and imagining a story. Although there are people that do that out there, and some of them are more inventive than others, and some of them seize upon some facts and fill it in with you know, nonsense.
Yeah.
In order to make certain points, and that's usually based on a prejudice, a story that they will then cherry pick facts to fill in, based on the idea that their theory was already contaminated by their predetermination.
Confirmation bias.
Yeah, and indeed that's what we find with the Warren Commission. And I don't want to belabor the JFK thing too much, but when you take a look at a special investigation, and they form four committees, okay, and two of them are involved with Lee Harvey Oswald, one of them is involved with figuring out Jack Ruby and what he did, and there is one more committee which is there to ascertain, you know, absolute facts regarding the incident itself and all that, none of them actually comes together for the purposes of, well, what? An open investigation, right? They have a suspect already.
Ridiculous.
And they did not, you know, sit there and deliberate about which suspects they were going to deal with. I mean, Jack Ruby is obvious because it was broadcast live, that murder. So you have kind of an easy to work with pool of suspects there.
Right.
As for who his conspirators could be, as for who could work with him, well, that's a whole other issue. But as we well know, the Warren Commission determined that both Ruby and Oswald acted of their own volition without any assistance from anyone else until the late 70s, in which case the official government conclusion now contains two conclusions where Lee Harvey Oswald is still involved, but to a 93 or 98% certainty, I forget which is which, because the House Select Committee on Assassinations looked at Dr. King's assassination and Jack Kennedy's assassination, and to a 93% plus certainty in both cases, one is 98%, one is 93%, determined that it was as a result of a conspiracy. And that's in the official record as well, although it was never followed up on, right?
Pretty cut and
anyway,
dry.
But see, the thing is, though, that the idea that people that participate in this in a responsible way have sought to utilize their own confirmation bias because they believe that someone of significance could not be cut down by someone who is not of significance, like a Lee Harvey Oswald, then they're inventing a story, which is different than being a conspiracy theorist, really.
Yes. Fake news.
When you objectively look at the term, when you're inventing a story to explain away the unexplainable, that is a that is the practice of generating mythos or mythology in order to explain the unexplainable, and that is what they basically turned the concept of conspiracy theorists into, is being the authors of mythology, which, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't people that are not authors of mythology out
Plenty
there, but for the most part, that is not actually true.
Well, more and more, I think it may be becoming true, because to discredit factual theories, then you have to throw in the mix the nutters.
Right. And some people are intentionally implanted into the
Certainly.
Communities, quite honestly. And there are others who just have poor thought processes, you know, who have ascended because they have an attractive story for one reason or another. You know, it's very good to, for instance, blame a guy like Lyndon Johnson, because we know factually that that he was one of these criminal presidential, you know, office holders. And
pretty bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, a guy who provably took bribes, a guy who was being investigated even as vice president, a guy who, you know, by many, many accounts, stole elections directly in Texas, a guy who has had grand jury testimony given that stated that he was responsible directly for the murder of several people, including his own sister. You know, that would be Billy Celestes, and, you know, I question the validity of his statements, because Billy Celestes was an admitted con man, but still, grand jury testimony is on the record there stating that he indeed was involved in the murder of, again, several people, including Josepha Johnson, his sister, like I said.
I have a hypothesis that if the governor of Texas, John Conley, wasn't his name, I bet if he has ever exhumed that that bullet will have gone missing that was in his arm.
Well, here's the rub about that. The reason why that's significant at all is because the magic bullet itself, right?
Yeah.
The thing that everybody points to that is not missing very much lead at all is apparently responsible, according to the official story, for what, 7 wounds in Connolly.
Missing
lead,
like that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. This bullet, according to the official story, had to have entered in the back of JFK's neck, exited his throat, entered the back of John Connolly somewhere, you know, in the mid-back area, destroyed one of his ribs, exited out just under his right nipple, entered the portion of his wrist where the bones come together and the radial nerve is present, smashed the wrist bone, severed the radial nerve, exited the wrist, and entered into his leg, bouncing off of his thigh bone, okay, and coming back out of the wound and ending up in his pants when they were cutting them away, because they had to take him right away to surgery. His lung had collapsed and his life was in danger after being wounded so badly. And the fact is that they find this bullet almost undamaged a little while later on a stretcher. And they claim that that is the bullet that actually was the fatal shot, which killed Kennedy and wounded Connolly pretty severely. Like I said, it severed the radial nerve, which is the a nerve in the wrist which allows you to utilize your thumb, which is a strange thing when you take a look at the Zapruder film and he's still holding his cowboy hat with that hand. But anyway, this is what is alleged to have happened, right? So, there was bits of lead left in John Connolly's wrist, and with a lot of bullet wounds, you'll find that there are trace amounts of a bullet which are left behind, even in the case of fully jacketed military ammunition, which this allegedly was, you will still have a little bit of, some elements of the bullet left behind, especially when they're striking bone and things like this. Now, they don't splinter into little pieces usually, although the other bullet which ends up in the car is shattered into a whole bunch of different pieces. Anyways, back to it. Here's the deal. If you add together the very, very small amount of lead which would be missing based on the manufacturer's specs on that piece of ammunition, and the idea that something, anything equating to more than a postage stamp worth of metal had remained in John Connolly in some way or another, then you have the government's evidence absolutely being false regarding the bullet. So when John Connolly died, a request was made to his widow. Can we please extract the lead from your husband's body, which was present and did in fact set off metal detectors and things like that for the rest of his life? Nellie Connolly did not allow it. And so John Connolly was buried with bits of the alleged bullets still in him, and we still don't have the ability to line it up. And meanwhile, like I said, if it struck Kennedy, hit no bone whatsoever, which is a difficult path to take, even by the official account, and then struck all these bones in Connolly's body and left not enough lead behind to make up for the fact that just a touch was missing from this bullet, then automatically we know that that's not the bullet that could have done the damage, period.
Right.
You know, and that's what's interesting about it. So he probably was buried with bits and pieces of that piece of ammunition.
I would contend that somebody pulled it out before he went into the ground. I don't think it's there. Ever he's exhumed, then it will not be found.
Well, you know, we could speculate about that all day, and wouldn't that be interesting? If they exhumed him and they found nothing in there, because we know that just based on public knowledge that there was metal still in his wrist, at the very least. And who knows if there had been remains of that bullet left in the abdominal cavity, in the area where it had to pass through and smash a rib. You know?
Right.
So
I guess that's not even a hypothesis, right? What's before that? Making a wild leap of faith and guessing.
Well, if you assume that, you know, there's nothing to see there, I don't know. Maybe you are a conspiracy theorist, but quite frankly, I'm talking to you about the forensic reality.
Yeah.
See, again, I'm looking at the conditions. Does it make any logical sense that a bullet that's missing the equivalent of weight from it that is a postage stamp had smashed all those bones and not fragmented in any significant way to leave more than a postage stamp behind between the two victims, mind you. Okay? And still, the guy has enough in his body, though, to set off metal detectors when he walks through them.
Right. Now, there's
that's a problem.
There's a long, long list of conspiracy theories. We got the top 10 from Time as the JFK assassination. Number 2 is the 9/11 cover-up. Number 3, and this goes with the Area 51, yeah, and the aliens. Paul is dead. Secret societies control the world. The moon landing was fake. That's coming up anniversary tomorrow. The fake moon landing. Jesus and Mary Magdalene, the Holocaust, revisionism, the CIA, and AIDS, and the reptilian elite. So I wonder how many in there are, you know, put in there to make the others look like idiots. And, you know, some are absolutely not provable. But some deserve serious contention. The 9/11 cover-up, how these buildings fell symmetrically, three of them, all in the same day, never before. And I mean, hey, they'd put out the demolition business in Vegas if they could demo buildings like that with office furniture fires and jet fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, not only that, but let's remember this about 9/11. One thing, whether you want to scream it's an inside job or not, here's a guarantee that you can, even if you believe every mainstream theory that's been put out there, because let's remember, most of the evidence was not recoverable to complete the theory of the official story. You know, do we have the bodies of the individuals? Do we have the proper evidence to prove that the individuals that they claimed hijacked these planes were even on these planes? In some cases, no. But you know what? Let's not get all down and deep into the forensics of it. Here's the thing. I can successfully, conclusively, without a question, say this. We were lied to about 9/11, period. Full stop. Why do I say that? Even if, again, you accept all of the official story, the situation with the EPA afterwards, the situation with Christy Todd Whitman, they lied to the people that were down there about the safety of the air quality. Done. End of story. We know that our executive branch lied about it regarding public statements that stated we had no idea that this kind of thing could occur. We know that provably. You were lied to about 9/11. You could say that all day, and even the most statist of statists really shouldn't be able to argue with you. Right? So that's that. Let's see. As far as Paul is dead, I think that's silliness.
He's
you
alive,
know, but
I
that's
tell
me.
You. He's with Elvis and Bigfoot. They're partying, man.
Well, you know, might be hanging out with Jim Morrison, too. And I'm hoping Hendrix is there because, you know, I got to speak to the lady that was with him last. And, you know, she's got some interesting stories to tell, but he should be dead. It is fascinating that there are, you know, we could go into the Kurt Cobain conspiracy. We could go into, which by the way, I think is actually fairly valid, depending on which version of it you're into. You know, and that's the thing. When you go to stuff like the moon landing, all right, I think that there's two separate questions here as to whether we've been shown the legitimate film of the time and whether we went to the moon at exactly that time and whether we were not there earlier, actually, whether, you know, whether there is a reason why we have not returned since then to the moon and again done anything. There's a lot of questions that are not answered properly in my estimation, but there you go. I mean, that's just a mess, and I don't claim to be an expert on that, so that's that. What else? Area 51, well, we might very soon have some interesting answers there, because I don't know what the military response might be to a storming of Area 51. What do you think?
I don't know that they'll make it. How many people are really going to show up? Bob Lazar, is he still alive?
Who?
Bob Lazar. He's a big out there in Vegas with.
Oh, right, right.
What was the guy's name there at Channel Las Vegas news station? I forget his name.
George Norrie?
George Knapp, I believe.
Knapp.
Yeah, George
Knapp.
Knapp,
right.
Uh-huh. And it was supposedly exposing alien technology in Area 51. But.
Yeah, as for what's in Area 51, I mean, you know, who actually knows? And there are actually several facilities around the country that have some pretty mysterious things going on at them, you know, outside of Groom Lakes and Groom's Lake and Skunk Works and, you know, all these different interesting installations that have experimental and odd things going on around them. There's plenty of questions to be asked there. Now, you know, it's funny because I look at things like Antifa and wonder how manufactured it is, considering they were supposed to have some large rebellion and nobody showed up for that either. You know what I'm saying? There's lots of these fascinating things out there. I'm wondering how old that time list was, because they didn't have the Q conspiracy on there, did they?
No, let me look at the date on this. Must be pretty recent. This is coming up on the 40th. No, well, it might be 10 years old because it's a 50th anniversary. So I don't see a date.
40th anniversary of what?
Yeah, the moon landing. So yeah, this was a 10-year-old post, it looks like.
Okay. Yeah, so it couldn't have possibly included the Q nonsense.
All right.
Which is a whole bizarre world where they brought a lot of things together there. JFK Jr. faked his death in 1999, I guess, and is the head of the Q conspiracy, according to some people, out there whistleblowing and letting you think that somebody who is really a puppet of the establishment is fighting the establishment via this mutilated concept of the deep state, which is a poorly adopted term from Peter Del Scott's concept of deep political circumstance and deep politics in general via the state. You know, it's really interesting to watch a guy who's supposed to be warring against the state actually continue to support the gas and oil industry, make sure that the military-industrial complex continues uninterrupted in its operations continuously, greater arms sales than we've seen in quite a while, you know, wonderful stuff like that, but he's fighting the, quote, deep state, end quote.
Yeah.
I find that hilarious, but anyway.
Well, I got to ask you on going to the moon, if they landed them there, why are they having trouble doing it again? They said they've lost the technology, and this is from a NASA scientist. They, you know, lost. That's hard for me to fathom. Maybe they could. But there's all sorts of good questions involving any number of these, and then there's some really stupid questions, I guess, also. The fact is it's meant to anybody that subscribes to a conspiracy theory that's a wacko and has no credibility. You know, a lot of people are drawn that are perhaps in feel like they've been slighted by the system and more apt to look for something to confirm these beliefs of theirs and their struggle for freedom as they see it.
Mm. And again, you know, as you see from that document which I shared with you, that's from 1967, right?
Mm-hmm.
Regarding the CIA discussing this concept, but they also issued memorandums to their assets, which were embedded in mainstream media. We know about this directly. We know about even people that were part of the Warren Commission, directing companies like you know, CBS and NBC. CBS is the most glaring, blatant example of it, to utilize certain tactics in order to marginalize individuals that were Warren Commission critics during the time from 1967 to 1970, certainly, over and over again. Now, why is that happening, Vince, at exactly that time? Do you know?
I don't. It's all part of the Orwellian system that's been set up, the propaganda that's been pumped into people for a very long time.
Oh, right, but propaganda and the reason why certain campaigns of propaganda are conducted at particular times have a logic to them as well. It is always a reaction of the state to put out disinformation because there is a need for it, right? So let me tell you about what was happening in 1967 that the public didn't even know about just yet. But the CIA knew. And that is that District Attorney Jim Garrison in New Orleans Parish in Louisiana was conducting an investigation attempting to find individuals who were connected to Lee Harvey Oswald, who were connected to the CIA, who were involved in the assassination, and he's the only individual to have ever brought a trial where he attempted to convict anyone for culpability in the assassination. Now, he was unsuccessful. We know that the JFK movie by Oliver Stone is in part based on the Jim Garrison story, but the reality is the investigation was going on as early as 1966, but really started to take shape in 1967, which is why it was necessary to discredit and undermine him. And in later documents, you'll find that, you know, the common trope of little green men. You've heard that phrase a lot, right?
Yeah.
So if you believe in the Kennedy assassination, you must believe in little green men, too. I used to hear that as a kid, Vince. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, I
recall. But the reason, it's funny, because it's almost like if you say that, you're taking your marching orders directly from the agency who said that you should compare it to, you should put it in the same category as, you should deal with it this way. So you can look at the tactics and the reactions of the national security state here and in other countries to discussions like this. You can also account for the fact that due to the fact that there was something called modern contemporary historical literature, which was actually created by the guy who wrote the book The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, but you know, really comes into play regarding individuals writing entire books, entire you know, series of articles related to the Warren Commission, related to that investigation, to that assassination. You know, so there had to be a pushback to that literature. People like Mark Lane, who, you know, I've got my questions about exactly how compromised he was at a certain point, but initially, you know, a radical leftist, essentially, who was challenging the system in general, and the Justice Department's reaction was to put him under surveillance, get compromising photographs of him. The man's dead now, so you know, try to undermine his legal practice and really to harass him in a lot of different ways. Kind of fascinating that in some documents they actually specifically name authors who are simply just writing. And these people, by the way, at the time, were just asking a lot of interesting questions. Like, for instance, in the 26 volumes of evidence in the Warren Commission, not just the Warren Commission volume that gives you a summation, but why is it that we need a study of Jack Ruby's mother's teeth as a piece of evidence?
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding you, it's in there, okay? And Mark Lane used to joke that I contend that even if Jack Ruby had bitten Lee Harvey Oswald to death, that this would not be a relevant piece of evidence to enter into any investigation.
That's about and, right.
But it's true. I think it's in, I don't remember which one of the exhibits it's under, but, you know, do yourself a favor, go ahead and search for the piece of evidence that is a study of Jack Ruby's mother's teeth in the Warren Commission volumes. It's there. Okay? So, you know, just saying, there's a lot of interesting stuff like that where the 26 volumes are loaded with testimony that goes nowhere, conversations that are interrupted, and even when we take a look back and we got a hold of the executive documents and everything else, here's the fascinating part of it. Everybody calls it the Warren Commission. It's not its proper name. It's named that way because of Earl Warren, who was the Chief Justice of the United States at the time and was sort of, well, you know, jawboned into doing it by Lyndon Johnson directly, by him basically saying, you know, if we don't have an investigation like this headed by people like you, we may possibly come to nuclear blows with Russia. So, you know, you need to stand up for your country and protect your fellow countrymen and prevent a war is the kind of statement that Johnson used against Earl Warren and a couple of Southern senators as well to get them involved. But back to it, who do you think was the most active member, mathematically speaking, asking questions, interrupting, directing executive sessions of the Warren Commission members? Vince, I guess first I should ask, do you know who was on the Warren Commission? But do you know who the most active member was, just, you know, generally?
McNamara?
Nope. McNamara is not on the Warren Commission. Right. He's the Secretary of Defense at the time.
Okay. Yeah, he was involved, I think, in the conspiracy, absolutely.
McNamara's an interesting study. I don't know that I would put him as involved in the conspiracy, but he was in a position to know a lot more than what he reveals. I'll give you that. Anyway, a couple of interesting people that are on there. John J. McCloy, who was the head of the Federal Bank of New York at one point, but also was the post-World War II Grand Chancellor of West Germany. A couple of other interesting things the man had done in the past, John J. McCloy. You have Senator Cooper and Senator Russell from the, there's part of your Southern contingent right there. You have former CIA director at the time, Alan Dulles. You have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren. You have other people like staffers like Arlen Specter and all that, who was one of the most active investigators, but not a member of the Warren Commission proper. You have Gerald Ford, who would later on become president of the United States, but at the time was simply a representative from the state of Michigan. Now, one of those men I just mentioned is the most active member mathematically during the conduct of business for the Warren Commission. Which one do you think it is?
Well, see, I was thinking somehow Nixon would have been involved in there, but so then I would tend to go towards Ford.
You know what? Wrong again, but I'll tell you. it's Alan Dulles.
Named, got an airport name for him.
But former head of the CIA who was asked to resign after the Bay of Pigs. Incident. So this is a guy who had recently, been put out to pasture from his job as head of the CIA, along with a bunch of other people, one of them being Earl Cabell, Charles Cabell. Oh, which brother was which? You know, I have a hard time remembering. One of them was the mayor of Dallas, though, and the other was a high-ranking officer in the CIA, Charles and Earl Cabell. In fact, if you go by the federal building when you're leaving Dallas, Texas, and you're on your way to the bus station like I was, you'll look up and you'll see the Cabell Federal Building on the street that connects directly to the Greyhound station there. But anyway, so isn't that interesting that the guy who seemed to be conducting everything behind the scenes was actually the former head of the CIA?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not surprised, though, because it seems to be that's the way things work.
But you see, to talk about these kind of things makes you a conspiracy theorist, right? but again, you know, back to that time period, people were questioning this official investigation. In 1968, Ramsey Clark had to impanel people to take a look at the medical evidence again quietly. But, you know, not a lot was done there. But why did the agency become actively involved in propaganda? People were asking a lot of questions based on the fact that the books were published. And the key thing they knew was coming, that they had to get out in front of, was the Garrison trial, which made international headlines. He charged a guy named Clay Shaw as a conspirator, basically. Somebody who was conducting, or should I say, directing Lee Harvey Oswald's movements and things like that behind the scenes, and working for the CIA and all that. And you know what they did to Jim Garrison?
What'd they do?
They made him out to be a lunatic in a lot of media circles and re-edited things he said. And even NBC put out an entire hour-long program filled with a whole bunch of false information regarding his investigations and mischaracterizations and, alleged witnesses and whistleblowers claiming that he was trying to get them to give false testimony and all that. And indeed, we know this to be a fact because Garrison took them to court. And actually, under what we used to call the Fairness Doctrine, got time on NBC to respond to their inaccurate reporting. And you can find those things both online, film of both of them at the time. But it's funny because when we take a very close look, there were individuals who were communicating with the Central Intelligence Agency that worked for NBC. In 1968, they had released, CBS did, released an entire series of programs backing the Warren Commission's conclusions, alleging that they had created an investigation. We find out later that John J. McCloy and other members of the Warren Commission actually communicated with the producers of that show to guide them as to what it was they were going to present. So, you know, the propaganda works to try and undermine those people that question the official stories, those people that question criminal events one way or another, runs rather deep. And again, this is just based on my knowledge of one particular subject area, right? We see this all over the place. Everybody's heard of Mockingbird, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Oh, yeah, that's a super long list. From Wanataco, conspiracy... A conspiracy theory is meant as a derogatory term to discredit and silence people who are critical thinkers, people who want to question a narrative. And that's quoted from High Impact Flicks, Brian over there. I watched that one video that Wanataco shared earlier. Also, I included into the radio log here some... Artunication from Wanataco and Anti. And here from William Bryant. It says, "Weep not, the world changes. Did it keep a stable, changeless state? 'Twere cause indeed to weep." Kind of summing it up about the conspiracy theories and into the idea of a new world order. The instruments of control are mostly in place and operational. Thanks, Wanataco. Part of people's concern is just the sense that around the world, part of people's concern is just the sense that around the world, the old order isn't holding and we're not quite yet sick. I added that into where we need to be in terms of a new order that's based on a different set of principles. From President Barack Hussein Obama, July 22nd, 2014. "We stand today as a unique and extraordinary moment. The crisis, as grave as it is, also offers a rare opportunity to move towards a historic period of cooperation out of these troubled times. A new world order." George Herbert Walker Bush, September 11th, 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Well... the idea that conspiracy theories and a new world order are part of what's in play of this world seems to be ridiculous to some people, and it seems to be regurgitated time and time again through the mainstream media. Now, of course, you will find some ridiculous theories out there, and some that are disputable and indisputable. The fact is, things have been being guided along for a very long time on the way the world works with the military-industrial complex and all parts of that, and the banking industry. AOC didn't even know about what the Federal Reserve was. Grimner shared that earlier.
Well, does she really need to know, actually? How about that as a question?
Yeah,
considering the fact that the Federal Reserve is not actually a governmental agency, and she's supposed to be part of the government, so why should she even bother to know about it? How about that?
I guess, but she's on some type of financial committee. Let me see if I can pull that up somewhere.
Well, you know, here we go with the jokes again and the names, right?
Yeah.
The people that are there to study law know nothing of law. The legal committees, right? They don't know what the laws are, even though they're supposed to be responsible for writing them and overseeing them. The people that are there for ethics concerns have no ethics. The people that are allegedly part of the financial concerns don't know anything about finance. I'm not surprised, are you?
No, you know, stock the swamp, you know.
Well, yeah, of course. You know, the alleged leader in charge of it all, the big orange man at the circus, you know, he doesn't know how to be a leader either, but that's okay as long as he echoes the right sentiment, for just enough of the population to convince you that it is of significance and to keep you distracted while, like I said before, business as usual goes on. You know, funny thing about a place like Afghanistan, we're still there. And seems to me as though the big change from W doing what he did and 8 years of Obama and now 2+ years of Trump, right?
God, it's only been 2.5. It seems like it's been 8 years already.
Yeah, I feel your pain. Okay. And yeah, I know who I just quoted. But the thing is, gee, we got out of Afghanistan, didn't we? Gee, we improved things on the planet somewhere, didn't we? You know, even the alleged, look, the economy's doing so well. For who? This is my question. For who?
For
you're
whom?
Still underpaid. Even if they give you the $15 an hour minimum wage across the board, it still will take you another $10 an hour to get you up to the level you were at in 1968. Okay, being paid minimum wage as far as your living standard goes. So how is this economy improved, improving, or doing anything? Oh, wait a minute. The price of oil has dropped, hasn't it? Not really. It has for the people that, you know, trade in commodities, but doesn't look like it's gone down all that much at the gas pump. I don't see the prices of anything going down. Matter of fact, every time I go to the grocery store, I do feel like the prices are going up. Seems like everything's got a new tax on it and new hidden fees on it every time I turn around, and nobody does anything about that. So, you know, no matter which way you turn, I want to know where the improvement is, where the corporation is not protected among or above, I should say, the individual. I want to know where that's at, because I'd like to see it.
Well, I will say that conspiracy theories of fact and the New World Order is an old order that's just rebranding itself and sharpening some points and honing the edges of others to make it more friendly, people friendly for worldwide occupation.
Well, right. Look, KRS-One, right? He said the New World Order got a facelift, and this time they put a black face on it. That's what he said about Barack Obama being elected, right? We saw that, and I'm paraphrasing, I know. But see, they put an orange face on it, and they tell you it's a white guy, and you're supposed to be calmer now. At least some segment of the population is. And hey, before that, it was a good old boy that you could have a beer with. And before that, it was another good old boy who felt your pain. And before that, it was a responsible adult who was likely running the ship while somebody else went senile in the office. But okay. Jimmy Carter, I'll give a pass to. Gerald Ford's always been a status stooge. You know, how far back we got to go as far as the people that are allegedly at the head of a government that's supposed to be of, for, and by the people, but is actually being run by the highest bidder, whether they be a corporation or a nation state. And even if you conclude that the conspiracy of the New World Order is something that is imagined by some, seems to be pretty palpable when people can communicate across nation-state lines, across language barriers and everything else, to consistently crush populations for profit, to consistently profit on all sides of every war we ever see emerge, right? Okay. To consistently allow all this stuff, no matter how much surveillance happens, no matter how much of your rights you're supposed to be giving away, no matter how much of your privacy you surrender, it seems as though people get abused and they get no relief from the alleged justice system because, well, if you don't have the cash, you don't have the ability to buy the result you desire. So tell me something. Where is there not evidence, logically, of a conspiracy of individuals who are seemingly at the top of the pyramid, if you will, controlling the circumstances by which the majority of us have to endure one way or another, unless you can go completely off-grid, and if you think you own a piece of land, you're mistaken, but you can try to go off-grid onto a piece of land that you think you own, attempt to utilize things that you believe are yours all you like, one way or another. The entire planet's on lockdown.
Where in the comply or die, what it comes down to in the very end.
Yeah, I mean, so why would you not conclude that there is a one, you know, a single mind in a lot of ways, a conspiracy. Oh, wait a minute, people breathing together for their own interests, maybe coming together to control the situation, to control the population one way or another. And indeed, why not give us plenty of things to distract ourselves with, like the continuously always evergreen argument over race, like the continuous evergreen always argument over the language, which is really hilarious considering the way the English language is utilized. It's a designer thing that contains so many other languages. I'm amazed anyone can speak it sometimes. You know, to argue over things like political correctness and to argue over exactly how offensive something was instead of actually getting something done, instead of, you know, taking these huge overbloated apparatuses or apparatuses, not sure which, like the military-industrial complex and utilizing it for anything other than the greater profits for, wait a minute, those people at the top again. And only ingratiating these things for the greater population to perpetuate the system itself. Well, I wonder why people think there's a conspiracy of individuals at the top if those are the prevailing circumstances, Vince.
You're right. Well, Chuck, we've run up against the hour right here. I appreciate you coming along. I think we've taken a pretty good look at the beginnings of where somebody might want to start and rethink this idea that conspiracy theories are wacko. We find them. Right. All right. Well, come back around. Chuck, you're running 5 nights a week now.
Oh, yeah, for the past few years, 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. And, hey, on Real Liberty Media, there is no Chelly channel, last I looked, so you can go there and listen.
Hey, thanks, folks. I got a wheeler pulling up on me out here. I believe if it didn't work, ride on by. And, hey, check the schedule at reallibertymedia.com. 5 nights a week, Chuck O'Chelly. Also at Real Liberty Media. Check them out. Thanks again, Chuck, for coming along. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, Vince. At least I didn't stay up until 2 a.m. and not come on, so cool.
Well, holla, man. Thanks.